from KSEV, the voice of Texas. This is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
It's that time again, folks. 2 hours of your favorite local live gun talk radio show, Guns Over Texas, brought to you by the one and only voice of Texas, AM 700 KSEV, and Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range, Houston's 2012 concealed handgun license headquarters. As always, I'm Jeff Sanford, firearms instructor, range operator, and all-around gun enthusiast. And I'm joined by my brother of the Spiral Tube and law enforcement contributor, Jason Berry. Jason, welcome back to Guns Over Texas.
Always glad to be back.
We'd like to wish our friend and co-host, Gary Montgomery, and his lovely bride a very happy anniversary today. Mrs. Montgomery has been kind enough to lend us Gary every Sunday, so the least we could do is wing it ourselves today and lend him right back to her for their special weekend. So, Jason, what's new with your gun life this week?
Man, it's been a slow gun week. It's been riding the desk all week for me.
Now, riding the desk, doesn't that mean you've been online looking at different guns and entertaining yourself with YouTube reviews?
No, I've been giving an honest day's work for an honest day's pay over there at in law enforcement. But occasionally, maybe I might have accidentally seen a gun sight or two.
So that's only when you're in the restroom, though, right?
Yes, only on my personal cell phone internet surfing. Ooh. Never on the office's computers.
Well, that's exactly what I meant. Yeah, I didn't mean to insinuate anything. Other than that, we know you're a consummate professional.
Of course.
Now, Houston, if you want to get involved in the show, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738 for all you folks out there not watching football. And you can also get us at Guns Over Texas Radio on Facebook. Normally, Gary mans all the social media. And so since he's not here, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to do the website or the Twitter or anything like that.
I'm going to try to take care of the website while we're on air.
Are you going to take care of it? Okay, so do you have the Facebook page too?
Yes.
All right. Now, you are an admin on that page, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So
I rarely know how to admin on it, but I'll learn today.
I actually posted Gary's been on that thing for the past couple months now. Mm-hmm. I posted a few things for the first time today. It was some items that I got to touch and play with at the training school that I was at all day yesterday.
Training school would that be?
Well, that was the John Farnham class held in Victoria, and that we've had John on a couple of times the past few weeks to tell us about his class and what to expect and try to get some students there. We did have some listeners that participated in the class, and we'll talk about all that in just a little bit. But there's other things to get to right now. Did you see the guy who jumped from 23 miles in the air?
Well, no, because some of us were actually at work today and did not have access to a TV while at work. But I did get updates from a friend of the show, Matty, who was kind enough to keep me updated via the cell phone.
Well, it's congratulations to Felix Baumgartner. He's a former Austrian paratrooper, and he hit 833 miles per hour today.
Wow.
Falling from 23 miles in the air. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, Felix. You now have the crown of most testicular fortitude of any man on the planet.
Now, I couldn't get a straight answer out of Matty because, again, I'm just texting away. I don't actually get to see any of this. But I know you break the sound barrier at 691 miles an hour. And he obviously broke that barrier. But
he flew past that.
He flew past that because he was so high up, there was no atmosphere to slow him down. Do you still get a sonic boom if you're pushing through no atmosphere? At that point,
I have no idea. I had to take science multiple times in high school and college. So if there's a listener out there that can answer that for us, you can get us at 281-558-5738 and tell us all about the laws of breaking the speed of sound.
And the amount of heat he had to build up also while moving that fast.
You know, he said he didn't even feel it in his suit.
Well, he's probably had a little adrenaline going, and you're so high up that I'm sure it's 100 below up there.
Oh, but did you see the pictures of him standing?
I've seen nothing.
Okay, I've seen pictures of him standing on the platform mm-hmm. that he jumped off of. And just looking at the picture made me queasy. Ugh. I could not imagine.
Now, I remember seeing the pictures from the other guy who's been up that was like probably 20,000 feet less than what this guy did.
Yeah, wasn't that in like late 60s?
Late 60s, yeah, they had someone do that. Like but that. He was, you know, oh, he only was at 100,000 feet, not at 120,000 feet or whatever this other guy was. But it was still impressive.
I'd like to know what kind of money this guy made from doing that.
Oh, because the Red Bull guy?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, the other guy was just an Air Force test pilot. Yeah, so he got whatever he was getting paid on.
He got a pat on the back.
Yeah, good job, son.
His check from Uncle Sam, his weekly check.
But Mr. Red Bull is going to parlay this into commercials and beer commercials and Red Bull commercials and, you know, put your logo on my
I think he just surpassed the Dos Equis man as you know, one of the more sought after.
The Dos Equis man already did that jump, but without the suit.
All right. Now back to gun stuff. Now, Jason, this is something that I've been wanting to talk to you about because, you know, we had another recent HPD shooting. And the first one, I was personally guilty of the same knee-jerk reaction of most everybody else of the what the heck was he thinking when it came to the shooting of the wheelchair-bound double amputee a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Now, you very succinctly explained that we simply do not know the circumstances. And even as bad as it sounds, we can't jump the gun, no pun intended, on calling it a bad or an overzealous shooting.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have another...
Well, the public certainly will. We try not to.
Oh, of course. Yes. And, you know, your cron.com is going to be... And .com must be short for communist when it comes to that website, because that is the biggest bunch of police and military haters that I could... I'm ashamed to say that it's Houston's newspaper.
And it's the only newspaper we get to choose from, except for the Houston Press, which leans even farther to the left.
Yeah. At least the Houston Press can be a little bit entertaining and it has good food reviews.
And I actually, I can't believe I'll say this, I read the Houston Press almost every week. I enjoy reading the Houston Press, but I know when I pick it up, I know where it leans politically, and I accept that coming out of the gate. The Cron's supposed to be neutral facts.
You know, the difference is the Houston Press lets you know right off the bat. They're not trying to use mind games and propaganda on you and spin as the Cron does.
Yep.
The Cron is all about spin. Houston Press, they're just straightforward with it, and I can respect that a lot more than trying to trick people into believing the same thing that you do.
Yep.
So anyway, we have another shooting, and this happened, I believe it was Thursday evening. These are the facts that we know. Kenny Relaford, 37 years old, off his rocker, okay? He's had a long history of mental illness. He also apparently likes to beat up elderly folks, and he's got a propensity for little boys. Now, Relaford kicked in the door of his 87-year-old neighbor's house, assaulted the old man, then went to the 12-year-old nephew's room where he molested the young boy, who is going to be scarred with this horrid memory for the rest of his life. Now, Officer Jay Rosamond responded to the scene. He went to Relaford's home, and he asked to speak with him. Relaford stepped onto his porch with his left arm behind his back, disregarding the officer's command to keep his hands in sight. Jason, being an officer of the law, would you consider that a failure of the attitude test?
Pretty much. If they're giving you lawful commands and you're refusing to obey those lawful commands, they're going to ratchet up the level of force that's going to come your way.
Okay, then Relaford began screaming at the officer. Is that another failure of the attitude test?
Pretty much.
He moved toward him with his hand still concealed. Again, Officer Rosamond ordered the man to stop, but Relaford continued to advance. Failure or not?
Failure of the attitude test, definitely.
When Relaford got to within 5 feet of Rosamond, Rosamond said that he feared for his life. And he fired two shots, according to an HPD spokesman.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after that, after Relaford's arrival at Bentob General Hospital, he died. Now, neighbors tell a bit of a different story. They say that that Relaford exited his house with his hands in the air, but they agreed. Relaford continued going towards the officer despite the policeman's orders to stop. Another witness said that he had both hands in the air as he walked toward the policeman. And she was mad because she called out to the officer, telling him, please don't shoot, he's mentally ill. Okay, now, let me ask you this. And then she said they had no reason to shoot him. Let me ask you this, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
A crazed man, known for bouts of rage with his neighbors, bearing down on you, do you think it's likely an officer is not going to comprehend and pick up on what a neighbor is yelling from at least one house away?
I can tell you from experience that, no, you do not notice everything that's going on. You're focusing on the threat, and unfortunately that tunnel vision is something we train to try to overcome. But having been a victim of it myself, having had somebody that I was trying desperately not to shoot while he was trying everything he could do to make me shoot him, and then afterwards when it's over, there's the person's parents yelling at you. They're like right behind you going, "Don't kill my son, don't kill my son." And you're like, wow, I didn't even notice you guys were back there till, you know, I had the situation under control.
Now, you brought up the term tunnel vision.
Yes.
Now, does that apply to the audio as well?
Auditory exclusion and tunnel vision. You focus on the threat. Now, what we don't know, and unfortunately we can't comment on because we don't know, but the other factors we don't know is how big was this suspect in relation to the officer? You say an officer was on scene, male or female, young or old. Are we talking a 25-year-old in-shape officer? Are we talking a 55-year-old, just about to retire, gray, long in the tooth, big in the belly kind of officer?
And we do know that Relaford was a veteran, so mm-hmm. he had military experience, which means that mm-hmm. he is going to know, probably have been trained in some sort of hand-to-hand
Would
combat.
Would the officer on scene have known that? I don't know.
What
was the original dispatch call
three
also?
Three or four times
okay.
previously.
If so they've already dealt with him, all right, then there's the other thing. I deal with you all the time. I know you're off your nut. Whether you're crazy or not, that's no excuse for, you know, it might be a reason that you're acting bad, but it's not an excuse to act bad. Mm-hmm. You don't get a pass. And if I'm giving you lawful commands, whether you're crazy or not, if you're going to give, you know, I'm giving you lawful commands and you're doing things that in the back of my mind are saying threat, 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 the officer is trained in a kind of Pavlovian response, all right? We're going to give you a stimulus, and you're going to give us this response. If I'm given verbal commands, the guy's not following them, I have this response to go to. It might be pepper spray. It might be taser. It might be calling for backup officers. How far away are backup officers at that time? How many bystanders are around? How many other people are yelling at him? Is there a crowd he's having to deal with in addition to the bad guy? Does he know that his backup might be 4 or 5 minutes away and he's going to have to fight this dude if not? I mean, there's too much going on for us to ever know what exactly was in that officer's mind. But I'm sure it wasn't, gee, I sure would like to kill somebody today because I just love shooting people. It doesn't work that way.
Now, I've seen people that have said, well, he should have just used pepper spray. What these people need to realize is that pepper spray is not going to end the fight immediately.
And you saw that personally.
We saw that personally a few weeks ago when one of our friends wanted to be pepper sprayed because he wants to get into special forces training, which is somewhere that he's going to have to do that. And so he wanted the experience of it beforehand. Mm-hmm. And so in a very controlled environment, mm-hmm. he took the spray. And this is, keep in mind, this is a young man with no mental issues.
Nope.
Okay? And just a good head on his shoulders, Mormon missionary, good kid. Mm-hmm. And after receiving a heavy dose of spray, he was able to run, 50 yards,
mm-hmm.
get on top of a punching bag.
And work the bag.
Work the bag for, was it a 30, minute?
No, it was 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Mm-hmm. Then he ran back to the place where he originally was sprayed. So that's mm-hmm. another 50 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Drew an airsoft gun and was able to shoot two targets 6 times each.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And was able to do all this without flipping out.
That's right.
Now, was he in pain and uncomfortable? Oh, he was very uncomfortable the whole time. He'll tell you.
He said it was the worst thing that he's ever done in his life.
But it didn't shut him down.
It did not stop the fight. It did not neutralize the threat.
No. It made him blind. But, when he's running along, if we hadn't guided him to the bag, he probably wouldn't have found it because he actually tripped over the bag going to it. But if somebody is charging at you, even if you spray them and they're blinded, if they wrap up on you, hey, they made contact. That's all they needed to do.
Yeah, this guy is crazy enough mm-hmm. that he's going to kick in an 87-year-old man's door, mm-hmm. beat the heck out of the old man, and then go diddle a little boy. This guy is off his rocker, and to think that pepper spray is going to keep him from assaulting the officer is asinine.
And do we know what the initial call was? When dispatch tells you you're going out there, do they say, there's just a disturbance, you need to go take a report at this address, we think something might be wrong? Or did they say, hey, you've got an assault in progress, you've got an active sexual assault, you've got an active home invasion, an active burglary? What level was he at before he even arrived on the scene? Because we don't know what the dispatch gave him before he went there. And if the dispatch tells you XYZ is going on, you need to get over there, he hits the lights, he lights it up, he heads over there, and once he pulls into the neighborhood, goes, this fool again? Man,
and
perhaps it took four of them to get him into cuffs the last time they were there, and he thought to himself, man, I can't let this guy go hands-on with me.
And the kind of idiocy that I just can't comprehend on when I read the Quran from the neighbors who talk about how, you know, he shouldn't have been shot and blah, 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 blah. In the same breath, they tell you that he's known for pacing in front of his house and banging his head on things and yelling at himself, and that he has also unsuccessfully tried to assault and rape a female neighbor previously, just a couple weeks ago. So he's known to everybody as a raging lunatic, a time bomb ready to explode, and yet they want to pin the blame on the officer. They've
always
been conditioned to try to pin the blame on the officer.
Well, if you look at the neighborhood, again, I don't know what the neighborhood is, but I'm assuming that there's some neighborhoods where people are taught from an early age that the cops are the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And what's the first thing you learn about cops? Watch a few episodes of Cops, and you see the officer go in, and dad's beat up mom, and the officer's, it's a five-man pig pile on the dad trying to get him into cuffs and knocking over coffee tables and stuff, and they're dragging him out. And what's standing there in the corner but three little kids watching the officer's pig pile on dad and drag him out of the house? And what are those kids going to grow up thinking? The police are horrible. They came into my house. They beat up my dad. Police are scary. I hate police. I hate police.
That's right.
And then they're going to raise up and, you know, they're not going to be real happy to see you when you show up.
What do you think, Houston? Was this a justified shooting, or are you one of those people out there that thinks that the officer went too far? You can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. Give us your point of view on Guns Over Texas. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. Right before we went on break, we were talking about the most recent HPD shooting that involved another mentally ill man that had just assaulted an 87-year-old neighbor and then went into the back of the neighbor's house and sexually assaulted his 12-year-old nephew. And after he charged the officer, or advanced at him.
Allegedly charged the officer.
That's right, with his hands behind his back. He was put down by the officer, and there's been, predictably, a lot of people that especially on the Cron, that think that this was a bad shooting.
Have they ever said that there was a good shooting, according to Cron?
Well,
most of the listeners?
I just wish that people would realize that, you know, read the article. Police have been to his house four times. He's known as mentally ill. He's tried to rape people. You know, I can't tell you what really happened, but I can say, in my honest opinion, I think Officer Rosamond deserves a commendation for taking a dangerous, mentally ill rapist off the streets and for saving the taxpayers the cost of his daily three hots and a cot. So we're going to head out to Spring and talk to Ken. Ken, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Ken?
Not a man. I was just enjoying your fine show there and talking about that ding dong out there. Good for him for turning that dude's switch off, man.
Well,
it's a piece of
garbage. How do you really feel?
You get all these people out there, no, you need to be sensitive to his needs. He's got a peanut in his head. You know what? If he's a turd, he's a turd. Make him go away. Sorry, everybody getting all hypersensitive about these knotheads out there that are just wanting to take advantage of everybody. You know?
I couldn't agree with you more, man.
All right.
Ken for president, right?
Yeah, I mean, everything would be different if there was four or five officers there and they had time to assess the situation, set up perimeter. I mean, you never know the totality of the circumstance if you weren't there.
And
but
we know that a mental health unit was not sent to the scene.
No,
so
there wasn't.
I'm pretty certain they didn't know that what they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And just because someone is tased doesn't always mean they're turned off either. Taser is great if it works, but it doesn't always work.
Yeah, you were talking about Cops just a few minutes ago, and I have seen on Cops where the taser did nothing.
Yep.
To
or
somebody.
They only get one barb in them and don't hit them with the other barb. It does nothing more than make them really, really mad.
Yeah.
So do you take that chance?
Tasers and pepper spray is good stuff for you know, people to say, oh, yeah, it works really good on TV, mm-hmm. and then you see it in real life, and then, well, maybe not. It depends, you know, if somebody's loaded up on something that's making him, you know, out of his damn mind anyway, mm-hmm. you're just going to aggravate him further, you know?
I've seen the pepper spray take some big boys down, but I've seen two or three people just get it and laugh, and you're like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen that stuff in the Marine Corps. You see some dude about the size of a dang gnat, and he's wanting to lift the Empire State Building. You'll see some dude that's, you know, bigger than Gary, who's mm-hmm. curling up like, you know, well,
in the fetal position,
like a little girl crying. Yeah. And I'll admit, I was one of those. I've taken the ride a couple times, and they sprayed me. And did it hurt? Oh, it hurt ridiculously. But I was still able to perform. Basically, when you get sprayed in the police, you have to be able to take the spray, usually engage somebody with a paintball gun, and then you have to go over and be able to put handcuffs on them. And after you do all that, it takes 30 seconds to a minute to do all that, and then they'll give you the water hose. But, man, that's a rough ride for that minute or so.
Funny thing after the fact, you know, with the pepper spray and CS and all that, is seeing some dude that's, you know, 6'5" and built like Schwarzenegger before he got fat, old, and out of shape, is seeing snot drip all the way to the ground and doesn't break not one.
I would laugh harder,
the mental image.
I've been that guy. So. I've been sprayed like 6 times and it sucks every time. It never gets any better.
It's awesome in a horrible way, though.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, we appreciate you calling and giving us your comment on the shooting. I think you're pretty much right in line with what I think about it. So we appreciate you, Ken, and look forward to seeing you out at Shiloh Shooting Range sometime soon. All right, let's head out to the east side. We know we're going to have an opinion with this one. We don't always know what we're going to get with it. But, Daryl, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Daryl?
You didn't. Hey, since you gave me that introduction, I had to give you something unexpected. Hey, how you guys doing?
Living the dream, Daryl. Living the dream.
Good, man. Good to hear from you, Daryl. So, what do you think about this?
Well, one thing I wanted to say, that little jailbreak you guys had, I was going to leave a bunch of donuts, actually a greasy napkin to the donuts that thwarted, but I'm not going to be able to do it, or wasn't able to do it. But I digress. That shooting and many other shootings, sometimes the story changes of the police officer. And, you know, you have a person that's sworn affidavit. I remember one where a gentleman got shot who was supposedly approaching the cop. And one Byron Gilliman, a witness, said that he was fleeing, going away from him, and was also on the ground. And so did the coroner, backed up those eyewitness accounts. Mr. Shearhart had contradictory to the evidence and the forensics of the autopsy, but I was wondering why he wasn't under arrest if they knew he had tried to do the rape.
They were going there to arrest him for that.
Oh, okay.
And he was not being compliant at the time.
I got you. Okay, that's a good question. That's the answer.
I can honestly promise you that nobody in the city of Houston or anywhere in the country, when the officer rolls up and says, "Sir, I need you to put your hands up, walk over here, then turn around and put your hands on the hood of my car," they don't get shot for that. You only get shot for when I say, "Sir, I need you to walk over here and put your hands where I can see them," and they don't do it. It's whenever they get non-compliant, that's when things start going bad right there from the start, man. Mm-hmm. Just simply do as you're told, and people don't shoot you.
I've seen some shots where people were being put in cuffs, laying down, and didn't move, barely move when they got shot, didn't move before. And, you know, you guys have talked about that.
Yeah, I've seen that video before, too. That was Las Vegas PD, and that was an accidental discharge. And I don't think that lady is working for the force anymore after that one.
Well, I've seen it in more than, I wasn't talking about Las Vegas, but I've seen it in a couple other places, too. Mm-hmm. And it kind of brings to mind the ex-Marine Corps deceased heart monitor or whatever medical alert went off. They canceled it. The company called and canceled and said it was a false alarm, and he was supposed to be coming with an axe, had a knife, and this and that and the other, but I never have heard the demeanor of his body when the bullets entered, et cetera. But the police officer changed, you know, an axe and a knife, that's two different things. You know, I can understand an axe and a hatchet, but an axe and a knife?
Well, Daryl, something that, you know, when you mention that there have been other shootings that were not justified and that people were on the ground and handcuffed, something I heard from John Farnham this weekend, who has had a long history with the police department. He's been a police chief in Colorado. We were talking about police shootings and unjustified shootings as well. And something he said rang very true. It was very short and quick, and it made all the sense in the world. Well, police departments have to recruit their officers from the human race as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in other words, there's still going to be people that slip through the cracks that aren't going to be the quality of people that you want as
or
police officers.
Or somebody that makes a mistake. There can be mistaken things. And even when somebody says, "Oh, I saw a knife, hatchet," whatever it is, until you've been in that ultimate adrenal dump, it's dark, it's 2 a.m., you're looking at stuff through strobes, because I don't think most people appreciate when you go out and you turn on your red and blue strobes, it changes the world. Imagine being in a disco club with strobes going off, only they're red and blue strobes. People are moving at high rates. You can't always know what's going on or who's around you. Stuff changes. And if you shoot somebody, "I thought he had an axe," and you get over there, bang, bang, bang. You look, "Oh, well, it was something shiny and silver, and he was swinging it. Turns out it was a knife." Well, stuff happens,
man. Hey, no, well, a case in New York, there was a lot of wisecracking by the officers and, you know, and them going in. I don't know. It's kind of hard to justify. It's still out in the thing, but, you know, certain things. I don't know if it was some racial things said or age disparaging things said, but that was some disrespectful things said by the cops before the guy was shot. And, you know, and
you know what? I'm not going to say anything to justify anything that happens in New York. Because I don't know anything about their – what I know about their police department is that they've had a ton of unjustified shootings and that they shoot themselves quite a bit.
They've
so I don't respect their gun handling skills in the least.
If they have 35,000 officers, which they do, 35,000 officers, and you say 0.000001% of them are bad, that still leaves you with 100 bad officers. I mean, yeah, there's going to be something bad happening when you got 35,000 members. It would be like having a city of 35,000 and saying all of them are perfect. Mm-hmm. There's no way it's not going to have problems. You know.
Well, you know, and I'll say this, too. That's why some of the officers don't like the cameras. But, you know, I like the cameras because the camera tells the truth. Did the person hit you first, or did you hit the person first while they were standing there talking?
There's a couple of them, and I wish I could remember the names of the videos, but I've seen a couple of them where dudes have looked like they got shot in the back by the officer for no reason. And then there's a second dash cam they show you. Have you seen it? It's in front of a convenience store where a guy turns around and points a cell phone at an officer, but he's holding it with a two-handed gun stance. And the first camera they show you, the guy's walking away from the officer, and you see him turn out of the corner of the camera. You see him turn a little bit like he's looking at the officer, and he turns away, and you hear pop, 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 and the guy drops. And he gets hit like 8 or 9 times before he falls over. And everybody in the classroom goes, wow, that's horrible. He shot that guy for no reason. They go, okay, let's play the other camera that was pulled in the other direction. And sure enough, the guy sticks his hand in his pocket, comes out with something, and does a two-handed shooting stance, just like a perfect isosceles stance, and sits there and aims right in at the officer for about a second, and then turns away, and everybody lights him up. It turned out it was a cell phone.
Let me make a suggestion to you. I know you're an instructor and all. Why don't you get some sort of a system where there's a dash cam and also maybe like an eyeglass or a
there is. It's called the Taser Axiom Cam. It's a head-mounted system that they're testing right now in various cities. I don't know how well it's going to go over, but because you have to wear it like a pair of glasses almost, but Taser Axiom. Google that up and have a look at it.
Something like the military wears where they attach it. Well, I don't know. They probably changed it, but they used to attach it to their helmet. But something that, you know, you could have a camera that would basically give you an eye view, you know, and, you know, an eye view, maybe something you wear on the ear. That's a communication device or just that a camera, you know. You can wear on your earlobe.
You know, it's something that sounds like a great idea, but we have to also realize that lots of police departments are broke. And
Yep. That's
something that they're not going to be able to afford.
And then when it starts raining or you're fighting or you're running or everything else, it's kind of like, well, how come we didn't call for radio backup? Because the first thing that happens in a fight is they rip your radio off. That little curly cord that goes up to your epaulet, Yeah. That's the first thing that goes.
And one other thing before I go. Jeff, you said something about you made some comments about being turds or whatever. I mean, if a person has a mental issue, I don't think that he should get a pass. Actually, I think I would be a little more wary of him. But I don't, you know, people seem to have a lack of sympathy. I'm not saying you on this one, but the caller before me, a lack of sympathy for that, you know, that they would give a dog. You know, I've had people.
There's a many, exactly. Many mentally ill people that do not commit rapes and assaults.
Mentally ill or not, a rapist gets no quarter from me. So I'm not trying to be combative or anything, Daryl. That's just my opinion. Rapist is the lowest form of scumbag, the lowest form of trash that you have on the bottom of your shoe that can possibly be. Not to mention rapist that assaults a young boy. That's even lower than a rapist. So
You know, you have to take into account the guy has something wrong in his wig, but that's not an excuse, and it's not an excuse to say, oh, well, I'll let him live. I can understand that, but I'll say this, and then I'll sign off. If the Chad Holly case would have been reversed, several civilians would have kicked a cop in the head and this and that and the other and did him like that. I think a lot of people would have a different opinion of it, and I look at it like this. You know, if you're enforcing the law and you made the comment about wrestling dad to the ground and when a kid grows up, how he feels, sometimes policemen do things that they're not supposed to do, you know. Mm-hmm. Bully people. We had an officer just convicted of raping illegal people who were undocumented,
yep.
Waitresses or barmaids.
And he got what he deserved.
He certainly
right,
did.
Right.
How many officers does HPD have, Jason?
About 5,000.
and that's
My point is, should he get a little street justice?
Yeah, he's
a
rapist.
When he gets in jail, he's going to.
Yeah, he's going
to. No.
He's probably wearing lipstick and eyeshadow by now.
About the police giving it to him.
No, and you've never heard us saying
other police would love to give it to him. Yeah. I'm sure of that, but they're too professional enough to do so because they know it's going to come back and get them.
Yeah,
they're going to let the other turds in jail do it for them.
You never let somebody do that. It's basically handing them your badge. You can't let it get away. I mean, when the cuffs aren't on and you've got to put them in cuffs, hey, anything goes at that point. You got to do what you got to do to get them in the cuffs. But once they're restrained, you can't do that. That's just the whole problem that you see police officers having is sometimes they don't know that it's time to turn it off. And you get so pumped up on adrenaline and bad things happen. I can't make excuses for them because we're not allowed to do it, obviously. But it's sometimes really hard to turn it off when you're that jacked up.
Daryl, we appreciate you calling, man. We appreciate your contributions. You're always one of our Hall of Fame callers. Thanks for calling, Daryl. All right, and we're going to head out to the Memorial area and talk to Prentice. Prentice, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, buddy?
Yeah, I really enjoy your program. Mm-hmm. Hey, I've got about getting a table at the Houston Gun Collectors coming in next April.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I've got about 20 guns, old, rifles, older stuff, nothing real valuable. What's the best way to research and kind of put a price on these things? Each one.
Yeah. I like to use GunBroker and just kind of gauge on what things are selling for on GunBroker. And when you see a price on GunBroker, you also have to look at how many times it's being bid on. If something is $3,000 and it has zero bids, but there's a comparable other product that's $2,500 and has 17 bids, then we're probably going to stick to that $2,500 range instead of trying to get it to the $3,000.
Yeah, okay, good. Thank you. And one more question. Using a taser, was that discussed somewhat why they couldn't?
I brought it up a minute ago. It depends. Again, we don't know what the state of mind of the officer was. When he rolls up on the call, he gets dispatched, and he has to drive for a minute or two. He gets to the call. He hops out. He's by himself at that point. We don't know how many other officers are there or how far away backup is. Do you automatically go to your taser, or do you automatically draw your gun? Has he been told there's just a disturbance, or has he been told there's an assault and a home invasion and rape happening right then? I don't know any of that stuff, so I can't say. But all those will play into his mental state when he gets out of the vehicle. And if he is already at a heightened state, hey, I'm looking for an aggravated assault that's going on right now, he might have gone straight to the handgun. And if he told the guy to stop and the guy didn't stop and is walking towards him, does he have time to put that gun back in the holster, snap it in and secure it, draw the taser and take aim if the guy is charging towards him? Or does he perceive that if that guy won't show me his hand, there could be a deadly force weapon in his hand? He could be waiting for me to put my gun away to go to taser so he can draw his own gun.
Yeah.
You gotta take all that stuff into account. The totality of circumstance is something that we don't have all of right now. So,
yeah, is there any way we could get some of these news reporters that just kind of far left that they would say, look, now you go to the door, you handle this.
Now, we've seen... Well, I've made that comment before. There's been a comment about us getting consent to search in an area, walking up and asking for consent to search by, while having all of our raid gear on and machine guns and handguns and all that kind of stuff, and how it's not really consent to search if you're standing there with all of your stuff on, not even pointing it at somebody, but having all that is intimidating. And you want to ask the judge, it's like, oh, well, do you want to walk up and knock on the crack house door at 3 a.m. and see if they're willing to open the door and let you in? You don't want to have a gun and scare anybody.
Oh, no.
There's always going to be people that think that everyone is rational like they are. If you're a person who's a journalist, you've been to college, you've dealt with all these other intellectuals, and you assume that everybody out there in the world is rational like you are. But you're not realizing that there's a lot of people in the world that can't be reasoned with. They're not rational. They might be crazy. They might be high. They might just be dumb as a post. But not everybody has your same set of values or your same willingness to sit down and discuss stuff rationally. Some people just want to hit you over the head and take your watch,
And I think if this had happened in a little bit more upscale, even a little more affluent area, you wouldn't have as many diverse opinions, I think.
I think there'd still be everybody would be out there saying, why'd you shoot little Johnny? Little Johnny was such a good kid, and he just didn't take his meds. Because my one big thing that I brought up, the guy who was trying to swing a bat at me, his parents kept saying, well, he just didn't take his meds. When he takes his meds, he's fine. And my whole comment and all that was, well, are we just supposed to wait until he goes off his meds in 3 or 4 more years and then tries to kill someone again? Mm-hmm. he's fine as long as he's on his pills. Well, that's great till the day he's not on his pill.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, okay, enjoy your program. Thank you very much.
Prentice, we appreciate it. Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. If you're on hold, and I know we've got a bunch of people that have been waiting for a while, we're getting right back to you as soon as we get back from this commercial break. So hold on for just a minute longer. This is Guns Over Texas. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. It's a good thing our microphones aren't on during the break. That's all I can say. We've been talking about the most recent HPD shooting, which I find, from what I know about it, I feel is totally justified. And we've had a little bit of differing opinion so far, but let's get right back out to the phone lines. We've got Robert and Conroe. Robert, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Robert?
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. I had a quick question. I don't want to take you all too off topic about 5.56 NATO. Uh-huh. And I guess I'll weigh on that, your conversation as well, too. I'm looking at doing a bulk buy, but I'm looking online trying to find the difference. I've never shot – I've always shot .223 Remington through my AR. So do you all have an opinion on which is best, the M193 or the M855?
Well, the question is, first off, is your AR chambered for 5.56 or .223?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Which one?
I'm sorry, it's stamped for 5.56.
Okay, as long as that's stamped on there, you got to make sure. Because basically, .223 will fire in a 5.56 just fine. 5.56 will not always fire in a .223. They're dimensionally about 99% the same, but 5.56 is a higher spec pressure than the .223. And .223 being lower pressure will work fine in a 5.56, but 5.56 being higher pressure will not always work in a .223 chamber without blowing stuff up.
And let me ask you this, Robert. What's the purpose of the ammo? Is this just plinking ammo?
Yeah, plinking, maybe just a little bit to, you know.
Cheapest stuff you can get to plink with.
Putting in storage for a revolution, that kind of thing, or just plinking?
You know, just a plink. Well, I don't know, maybe a little bit of both.
All right.
Half and half.
A company I've been using, I like to buy locally, and ammunition to go has always been a good one for me. But there is a company called SG Ammo out of Stillwater, Oklahoma, that I've used for a lot of my personal bulk buying 5.56 ammo or 223. They usually have PMC and a GIA, which I'm told a GIA is Remington's Mexican factory. And all the GIA that I've shot has been fantastic. And it's a good, cheap brass ammo. Mm-hmm. It's not as dirty as even as say Winchester, mm-hmm. and it works well. I haven't had any failures. It's been a really good ammo for me. And I think I've been paying $299 for the PMC and mm-hmm. $309 for the AGIA. And so that's a good deal for a case of .223 right now. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's SG Ammo out of Stillwater, Oklahoma. If you buy from them, send them a little note in the comments field that the guys at Guns Over Texas could maybe use some free ammo, mm-hmm. you know, for talking about it.
And as far as which one, if you're just doing it for plinking and stuff, I think you're going to be well served with either one of them. I might just say whichever one, if you have a higher twist rate in your barrel, if you're 1 in 9 instead of 1 in 7, you know, that might depend on what kind of round you want to get. Typically, with 1 in 7 twist barrels, the heavier the bullets work a little better, the 64 grains and up. If you're dealing with a 1 in 9 inch barrel, the best groups are going to come from the 55, the lower weight bullets. So I don't know what your barrel twist is, but either one of those rounds will shoot either way. You can shoot light bullets and heavy barrels, all that kind of stuff, but you get tighter groups, supposedly, if you go with lighter rounds in the 1 in 9 twist and heavier rounds in the 1 in 7.
Okay, yeah, I have one AR with the 1 in 9. The other one does have a 1 in 7, which I haven't shot the one with the 1 in 7 yet.
No problem. So, like I say, it'll function both of them, but like if it's set up with the right ammo, it might give you a 3-inch group, and it might give you a 6-inch group if it's the wrong twist. It'll just open up the groups a little bit.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate that, Ben.
No problemo, sir. And what did you think about the shooting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it drives me crazy to see the media just second-guess. It's always, always, always when you have someone who was unarmed, you know, they shot an unarmed man. But like you guys were saying and talking about, and I'm glad he addressed it with the last call, was mm-hmm. what, you know, did he have his weapon drawn, or did you say he got within, what, 5 feet of him?
Mm-hmm. 5 feet before he shot.
Yeah, I mean, if he already had his weapon drawn, who knows what the guy was screaming at him. That's mm-hmm. not enough time, like you all were saying, to transition from, you know, your weapon to your taser. And I don't know. I just think that the media definitely jumps the gun on those kind of things. And, you know, second guess is way too much.
And when you have your gun out and it's pointed at someone, whether they're off their nut or not, if I'm pointing at your chest yelling, stop, stop, get back, stop, get back, and you keep coming, you kind of know what's going to happen. I mean, there's an end result that's predictable, you know. So
absolutely.
Maybe he wanted to go down, you know. Yeah, I'm not even using my big boy voice, but trust me, when I'm out on the street and get my big boy voice going, it definitely gets someone's attention in all languages.
Robert, we appreciate you calling, man. We appreciate you contributing to Guns Over Texas, and hopefully we can help you out with your ammo situation.
All right. Well, thank you all. You have a great night.
Thank you, sir. You too. Now we have a special caller. Is he on the road?
Special? How special is special?
Short bus special.
Ah.
No, this is the one and only Encyclopedia Montgomery. Happy anniversary, Gary.
Thank you, sir.
And to your wife as well. And thank her for taking you, off of our hands today.
Well, we can have him for a few minutes. She's sharing.
So what's new, Gary?
Well, you know, apparently the planet's rotation came to a halt briefly, and my wife actually volunteered to go shooting with me yesterday. And she actually had a very good time behind a bow, discovered that she's got an affinity and an aptitude for running a compound bow and doing 3D shooting.
Well, it took 10 years, but congratulations.
So wait a minute. This is your wedding anniversary, correct?
Yes.
And your idea of a romantic wedding anniversary is to take your wife shooting and bow hunting.
I took her to the wonderful spa and resort here in Cedar Creek, the Hyatt Lost Pines Resort, and one of the activities that she picked out, or actually two of the activities that she picked out, were archery and actually trap shooting, and she did pretty darn good at both.
Well, congratulations. You finally got her thinking proper for a Canadian.
So did she enjoy it?
She enjoyed it. The shotgun was, she's being all soft and nice and stuff. The shotgun's giving her a little bit of soreness today, but she did pretty well.
It's a good sore.
Yes.
Something that she's going to do again?
I think we may get her to do the bow again. I don't know about the shotgun.
She's not going to go to the Magpul Dynamic shotgun
1,000
round in a day course?
Class coming up anytime soon.
So are you headed back to Houston now, or are y'all still out?
I'll
still
be headed back tomorrow, so I'll be back in studio next week.
All right. So you'll have plenty of new stories to regale us with, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And you got to tell me.
The Lockhart is an interesting town, let me tell you.
And you tried Black's Barbecue?
I tried Black's, and apparently the meat was burnt.
Oh,
there's nothing wrong with crusty, the end pieces of the brisket. They're the best part.
Yeah, but when the whole serving is like that.
When the whole brisket is a hockey puck, you messed up.
Man, that's a disappointment because I've heard nothing but great things about that place.
Well, but in the same family is another place called Smitty's, which we tried today. Smitty's, now they test your resolve when you walk in because you walk in right past the hot box. And there's a pile of wood there, and they're sucking in the flames off of the wood. You're in the smokehouse, and it's good and hot. But they definitely made up for any shortcomings of Black's. And apparently they're the same family. It's just, some part of the family wanted to split off and make a bigger shop, and Smitty's is the result. They're both, both very flavorful and all that good stuff. But when we had Smitty's today, we could actually eat it. And as opposed to Black's yesterday that I've had jerky that was...
Well, you could always whip south about 30 miles and hit Luling Market.
You may try that on another trip.
All right.
Yeah, I think you need to give Black's one more try before you come back tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what everybody says, but I don't know. That was pretty rough, dude.
I think you need to bring back some jerky for me.
Yeah, we'll see.
Well, Gary, we appreciate it, man. You got anything for our callers this week?
I was listening to Daryl and some other folks that were talking about all these HPD shootings, and yes, it is unfortunate when that sort of thing happens, but, it's the sad part is that whether it's an officer-involved shooting or even a civilian, the media often tends to jump to the conclusion that somebody did something wrong, and that's not, more often than not, most people don't, go around looking to do harm to other people. So if we find ourselves put in a position to have to do that, most of us do it
to the training that you were given.
Yeah, you know? I mean, you roll with what you got. Now, I will say that very few civilians and very few of us address things realistically in that how many of us really do take the time to discriminate. And there's actually a really cool article about that that just popped up on Wilson Combat's blog, and it's actually written by none other than Paul Howe, who was with Delta. And, you know, it's if there's somebody that you, that whose opinion I would respect on the issue of target discrimination, it's probably Paul. You know, somebody who spent a lot of time going into, you know, really dark places and really having to decide, okay, you know, who's a good guy, who's a bad guy. We all have this imagination that will always be clear cut as to who we need to shoot.
Oh, and there's always great lighting and there's nothing running around and everybody holds still and lets you see what they're doing.
And neighbors aren't screaming
and
at
you're,
you.
You're not tired, not a breath, or on your third shift, or, I mean, it's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's something to think about that, you know, it's not something we often get to do in our own training that we can set up on our own, but, you know, it's when you go to these classes, think about whether or not that's something that you guys are mentioning. It's fine if the school is just about shooting efficiently, and that's cool. Paul certainly does that, but he also, and I can speak to this from having attended a few of his classes, he also makes you learn how to identify and discriminate between targets and between who's a threat and who's a non-threat. You know, his methodology may be something that makes some people uncomfortable at times because we run through with guns at a high ready, which may or may not be with the department's policies or whatever. But as he put it to me once, he said, you know what, I can apologize for pointing a gun at you. I can't apologize for shooting you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he's a man who's been there, and, you know, like I said, his opinion is probably one of those that I respect above most others.
Yeah, Paul Howe has definitely been there and done that.
Yep.
Now, Gary, let me ask you this. One of our last callers had a question about plinking ammo for his .223 or for his .556. What do you like to use when you go shoot your M4s?
The old XM-193 ball is just fine. You know, it's probably one of the cheapest you can find. So I think right now it's averaging 28 to 30 cents a round. And it works, you know, it is not quite as accurate out of a 1 in 7 twist as it might be out of a 1 in 9 because it's a lighter weight bullet. But in terms of just plinking and poking holes in things, it works just fine for that. And it actually works okay if you have to poke holes in other stuff.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, we appreciate you giving us a call, man. And make sure to tell Mrs. Montgomery happy anniversary.
I will certainly do that.
Thank you, sir. We look forward to having you back next week.
All right. We'll see you the next week.
All right. Let's and, Gary, don't forget my Black's Barbecue.
Yeah, sure.
Let's head out to Meyerland and talk to Mitch. Mitch, welcome to Guns Over Texas. What do you say, Mitch?
Yes, sir. I was going to comment on this shooting. I'm kind of impassioned about that, as you know, because when we met, I went over some of my background with you. I've taught a number of agencies in and around Harris County, Fort Bend County, et cetera. And, you know, there's two thought processes. There's a civilian who can run and hide or can look through the window blinds. And then there's the police officer who's called. And when he's called, he cannot back off until the situation is resolved. Also, I'll comment back on the 21-foot rule that we talked about in an earlier time, where a guy with a knife, and usually they hold it behind their thigh, and your experienced officers over there will verify that. This guy let him get within 5 feet. I mean, that's almost dangerous for the police officer.
That's incredibly dangerous for the police officer. That's swinging distance right there.
Jason, will you explain the 21-foot rule real quick?
Yeah, it's an old standard that came about in the late 70s, early 80s that basically said that a person from a standing start can clear 21 foot in about 1.5 seconds. That would be a 7-yard sprint from a standing still start. And it generally is accepted that it takes an officer about 1.5 seconds to draw and fire one shot. So by letting somebody get closer than 21 foot to you, you've basically closed that reactionary gap that you don't have enough time to deploy your handgun and get off a shot into the person. Now, just because you draw and get off a shot, if someone's charging at you, doesn't mean it's going to stop them. 9mm and the heresy here, a 45 caliber bullet is not going to knock somebody backwards. They're still going to be charging. You're still going to have to get offline. You're still going to have to deal with whatever the attack is that's incoming. But if somebody is within that 21-foot circle, you need to already have your weapon out and need to be up and ready to go, because they're going to be able to close that distance faster than you can react.
All right, so keep going, Mitch.
When I talked the class out in Fort Bend and so forth in Pasadena, I gave them that information, and they didn't, because it wasn't part of the course that they had taken yet. But I actually proved that to each one of those classes using red-handled guns and knives. But the other thing is...
Hey, Mitch, we've got to, we're going to have to put you on hold and come back for the second hour. We're fixing to hit our long break. So, Houston, we appreciate you listening to the first hour of Guns Over Texas. Hang on about 6 minutes longer, and we'll be right back with hour number two of Guns Over Texas.
From KSEV, the voice of Texas, this is Guns Over Texas. Jeff Sanford and Gary Montgomery are the gun nuts. They believe in America. They fight for your Second Amendment rights. They teach safety, advanced shooting skills, and responsible gun ownership. They just love guns. Guns Over Texas starts now.
Welcome back to hour number two of Guns Over Texas, Houston. We've been talking about the recent HPD shooting of a, well, obviously, lunatic who charged an officer, allegedly, with his hands behind his back. And the officer, I applaud him for the work that he did in taking a known mentally ill, mentally deficient rapist and child rapist off the streets. So we were talking to Mitch right before we went to break, and we'll get right back to him. So Mitch in Meyerland, what you got to say, Mitch?
Well, you know, just recap briefly, there's two thought processes, one of a civilian and one of a police officer. The civilian can stay in his house and hide unless somebody's coming in it. But that police officer is responding to a call that has to be an emergency of some sort, whether it's the person calling feels threatened or has been attacked or something of that nature. So when he gets there, he has to resolve that. He has to find out what happened, where the bad guy is, what's going on. And a civilian doesn't have to, so they don't think like a police officer. So here you have a police officer who was dispatched and trying to find out what was going on, who let the guy really too close to him. And I've got to remind people, a lot of people forget things. One of my dearest friends on Fort Bend County Sheriff's Department stopped two Hispanic people walking down the side of 59. Guy was eating chips out of a Doritos bag. Police officer asked him to show him his hands and all that. Well, he got shot dead. Guy had a gun in the Doritos bag with his hand in it. Mm-hmm. And when you know those things happen, you tend to, you know, be very wary of walking upon these people. And the civilian public has no idea. I mean, I know people who've talked about finding firearms with hollowed-out bread sacks. So the guy, it looks like he's carrying a loaf of bread, but he's got a .45 inside of it, you know.
I've seen a hollowed-out Nerf Super Soaker squirt gun where they actually hollowed it out and stuck a shotgun in there and painted the bottom of the shotgun all bright plasticky colors. And so it looked like a big Nerf Super Soaker, but instead of pumping it up to squirt water, the actual pump shotgun worked in the Nerf Super Soaker.
Wow.
Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. You know, if these thugs would be as – if they would put as much thought into getting a job as they do in how to hide their guns, mm-hmm. they might actually be successful people.
You could hope.
You're innovative enough to turn a shotgun into a – looks like a real super soaker. Mm-hmm. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that guy should be making toys or something.
Yep.
You know?
Well, maybe in prison. But anyway.
That'd be even better.
But the longest short of it is I think the civilian public has no idea of what these guys run into. And I've had both good and bad experiences with police officers because they don't know my background. They just handle me. And fortunately, it's only been for traffic tickets. Some were nice, some weren't. But the reality of it is that you're coming up on a situation like that. I think the young man who took this guy out showed tremendous restraint by letting him get that far into the situation.
Yep.
And for these little wussies that are sitting back here writing these stories, and these people who have never, it's kind of like, well, when we were under the old law where, you know, if you should have retreated, you know, that kind of thing, the little purple-haired lady said, well, I don't know why you didn't run out the front door so he could steal everything you owned. And now we're under cancel doctrine, which is a lot better. But, you know, I just empathize with these police officers, and the civilian public has not been exposed. Most of these people have never been in a life-threatening situation. They're walking around fat, dumb, and happy.
Mm-hmm.
And but when it's them, where's that damn cop?
Yep.
You know? Why didn't he hear? Because mm-hmm. I don't have a gun. I can't defend myself because I'm a wussy.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least you're armed and you have a gun, Mitch. You're preaching to the choir with this crowd. We appreciate you giving us a call and being a part of Guns Over Texas, you know, as usual.
He brings up a good point that we have a training facility that has what's called a FATS machine in it. FATS is a firearm training simulator.
Mm-hmm.
And you go into the FATS room, and basically there's a projector built into the ceiling of the room, and there's an entire wall that's movie screen material. All right, and they will project. They have a digital projector in there. And they have guns that are wired into a computer system that actually are hooked up to a big air compressor. And as you slam the magazine into the gun, it actually activates the air compressor system. And as you pull the trigger, the computer knows how many rounds each individual gun should hold, and it can make the gun cycle with the air pressure. You can change magazines on them. It'll drop the slide like a regular gun. You can induce jams in these guns. And you also have probably 400 or 500 different scenarios that you can put officers in. And with this, you can have them officers, you know, they can go into a bar and try to arrest a rowdy patron, or they can do a traffic stop, or they can be going into a meth lab. There's all
now,
kinds of stuff.
Would this kind of machine be available for, say, like an HPD or?
Any large department is going to have access to one of these. And it's just a training tool to give people a little stress inoculation of there's not a paper target standing there. We can make it nighttime. We can make it daytime. We can have people running around. We can have scared civilians jumping in front of you, whatever. But the thing is, I've been told by the folks that run that machine full-time that they've had judges and defense attorneys and prosecutors and so forth brought out there under certain trial conditions and say, well, we're going to have you run a few scenarios. And inevitably, everybody in there thinks, oh, officers shoot too much, and oh, they're too quick with the trigger. You put all these people through 4 or 5 scenarios on the FATS machine, and sure enough, every time something pops out of any door, they're lighting it up with 7 or 8 rounds every time. And you're like, whoa, 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 you mean you didn't stop and rationally talk with a guy and wait and see what happens? Well, it's dark, and they keep popping out. They're shooting at me. Oh, really? It's just amazing when you see somebody who's had no training go through a FATS simulator, and they just light up everybody.
Yeah. It's something I recommend that people do is mm-hmm. get out and do something like that. I know Gander Mountain has that.
Gander Mountain has one that is available to civilians.
Yeah. It's, what is it, like $30 for a run or something like that?
I don't know, but normally I don't have a lot of great stuff to say about Gander Mountain, but their little firearms training facility is a nice, nice setup.
Yeah.
And the one we have is only one wall. They actually have a 360-degree shoot setup where I got to go in and play with it a little bit, and man, they give you a big scenario where there's 2 or 3 people jacking with you in a parking lot right in front of you, and while you're trying to draw down on 3 people, they've got another one that walks up behind you, and you hear bang, 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 and you turn around, and there's the one that, while you're arguing with those 3, you can see them. When they show you the replay, you can see somebody break off and start walking around behind you, but tunnel vision happens, and you start focusing in on what you think the main threat is, and you don't see the one guy that breaks off from the pack to come up behind. It is an eye-opener for most folks.
It definitely is. And speaking of eye-opening training, mm-hmm. I went to Victoria this weekend to work with our friend John Farnham.
Great segue.
Thank you for that, sir. And it was one heck of an experience. I went as an instructor. I'm an affiliate instructor for John's company, Defense Training International. And so I get to go to these things and not have to pay for it, thank goodness. But I don't get to shoot as much as everybody else, and I do have to work when I'm there. And I really, really enjoy getting out and getting to work with the people, with the folks that go out and get this training. Because I would say that they are part of less than 1%, way less than 1% of gun owners who are seeking real, legitimate training.
Yep.
And that's not – you know, that goes beyond your taking a basic pistol one at the range or taking, you know, maybe a defensive handgunning class at the range,
well,
a 2-hour course.
All that stuff is good, though, because if you can't load the bullets into the magazine or you can't seat a magazine properly or clear a jam or even unsnap your holster, we always need to crawl before we walk, before we run. So mm-hmm. if you're not comfortable with all that kind of stuff, John's probably not the place to start. But if you're comfortable with being able to draw and being able to load your own mags and being able to get the gun up on target, that's good training to go get from John.
Well, there's three different shooting areas at the range in Victoria. A local Victoria doctor owns this range behind his house. There's three different berms. Mm-hmm. And so John takes one side, and his wife Vicky takes the beginners on the other side.
Oh, okay.
So there, it's set up to take anybody from the brand new, never fired a shot shooter to the advanced gunner, the advanced operator. And it's never surprised – well, I'll take that back. It always surprises me at how many people think they're advanced operators.
Until
and then they learn the hard way that they're not advanced operators.
Yep.
And so I give these people all the credit in the world. And we've got – there were actually a few listeners out there as well. And I give them all the credit in the world for going out and seeking this training. And this goes so far beyond anything that you can do in a range or anything local, because this is actual. You're moving and shooting. You're going into the Sewell position, and the Sewell position is where your thumbs meet at your chest. The gun is pointed down towards the ground, but clear of your feet and moving around with the gun. And that's how you would move if you're out in public with a gun drawn and you have to move through a crowd or something like that. And so this is the Sewell position, the S-U-L position. And, you know, we're moving and shooting using the Sewell position, checking your six all the time, constantly, while you're shooting steel spinning targets. Now, if you've ever shot steel spinning targets before, you know what an absolute nightmare they can be. And it had been about 2 years since I'd actually shot steel. And so I had bad dreams about it for 2 days before heading out there. And, you know, I hit three straight mags. Did not miss a shot every four rounds, moving, reloading, shooting, three straight mags, 52 rounds, and still didn't spin the thing. Now, granted, I was using a 9mm, and I went before they hit it with WD-40. But 52
Well, you could
straight.
Still hear it go, ba-ding.
Oh, yeah.
I, was, hit
I hit it every single time, and those things were just not moving.
And unfortunately, this will be one of the calls that we'll get eventually about, well, that's why you need a 45 and not a 9.
Yeah, and but, you know what? The 45s didn't spin it either until the WD-40 hit it.
Yeah.
Once the WD-40 hit it, then the 45s were working. Now, what I saw with the 45s, the 1911s, I consider the 1911 to, if I'm going to own one, it's not going to be a defensive gun. It's just all there is to it. Because watching these people, these poor folks that had the 1911s trying to go after these spinners, the amount of reloading that was going on was unbelievable.
Yeah. Eight rounds is, it might look good on paper, but...
It goes quickly.
Oh, yeah.
It goes very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. Especially when every four rounds you have to move. And when you move, you're taking your eyes off that spinner. Mm-hmm. And that spinner is starting to slow down because it's not being hit by the bullet. And so then you have to get back on target and then continue to try to make it spin. And it was well into the night before a number of the 1911 guys actually got him to spin. And I got to give it to him. You know, they made it spin finally. But we're talking, we're on the range at 8:30 in the morning, off the range 10 o'clock at night. So it took a lot of people a very long time to get it to spin. And so a few of the people learned that maybe they weren't quite ready for the advanced side and went over to Vicky's side to hone their skills. But it was one heck of an eye-opening experience.
And the actual ability to use your equipment, that's something I don't think everybody understands. Like, I started off with one set of equipment 15-plus years ago in law enforcement, and it has evolved constantly. As I learned that this works better than that, that doesn't work as good as this, this holster is better than that holster, this belt feels great when I'm sitting all day, but when I actually go to the range, the holster stinks. You got to get out there and try your equipment. And all those guys are like, I'm a 1911 man. Okay, get out here and run it in a high-stress area. Oh, well, yeah, maybe not now.
Yeah, you might start carrying that extra spare seven mags to go with that 1911 now since you only have eight rounds.
What were you running?
The M&P. The full-size M&P 9mm, and man, it, you know, to hit the spinner 52 consecutive times and to hit it in good areas of the spinner at the right time.
With an M&P.
And to not even tip that thing over halfway, it was frustrating, but at the same time, I knew that I should have been, you know, if I had, maybe if I had my 40 or 45, it'd be spinning. Mm-hmm. But all I did was laugh. You know, I didn't let the spinners get to me. It was the first couple times that I went out and took these classes. You know, the doctor who runs the range, I think he was ready to give me a script for Zoloft or something because I was, those spinners had me down. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just can't get deflated when you're going through training like that.
I remember you talking about the first time you went out there and you had a very different weapon system and you learned the hard way. Why don't you go over that right quick in case the folks hadn't heard it.
A Sig Sauer P226, mm-hmm. and the Sig Sauer is one of the few remaining major manufacturers that uses the decocking lever. Mm-hmm. And with the decocking lever, your first shot is from double action, and it's a long, heavy trigger pull. Mm-hmm. But everything after that, the subsequent shots are very short, very light. Now, the decocker from single action, the decocker sends that hammer from single action back to double action. Mm-hmm. Now, the rule on the range, since everybody is moving and shooting and moving around each other and moving in crowds and guns are out, you have to decock that SIG every time you move. Mm-hmm. Rules on the range, you fire four shots, you move. And so every four shots, I'm having to decock the gun, move, and then fire again from double action. Decocking the gun alone took time away mm-hmm. that I didn't have to get that spinner spinning again. Because once you get off that spinner, it immediately stops to rotate. Mm-hmm. And so to go back from double action and try to hit that spinner from double action after you've decocked the gun after four rounds, it's a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And so the first day I had the 226. When I came back for day two, I was shooting a Glock 23.
And a man who learned.
That's right. And most people, out of everybody out there yesterday, all I saw were a couple of XDMs, mm-hmm. A couple of M&Ps, all Glocks. The SIGs were not there. Berettas were not there. Mm-hmm. We saw a few CARs as backup guns, a few M&P Shields, a XDS. Everything ran just fine. Everything ran very well. Now, previous times when I've been out there, now keep in mind, this is also for the advanced side. Many of these people have been to this class before. Mm-hmm. And when I saw these people previously, we had 1911s.
Yep.
We had SIGs. We had Berettas. All guns that have now been dropped and gone for Glock, M&P, XD. So and people tend to learn real quick when you go through a high stress learning environment like that. Now, this kind of training, you're not going to get anywhere. You just can't get it because people aren't going to – the liability to let the average person come into a range and move around in a crowd of other shooters with a gun out is just too great for ranges to do.
Yep.
So this training, you pay a pretty penny, but
that's covering a lot of insurance costs.
I'm sure it is. Mm-hmm. Not to mention it covers John's cost. I've said it before, and I'll say it again 100 times. The cost of the actual shoot of the class, $495. Uh-huh. I would pay that just to listen to John pontificate in between. sessions.
I've heard the comment before because I know folks who have made it. Well, I bought the DVD. You know, I watch Monday Night Football all the time. Does that mean I can go out there and throw like Schaub or Elway or anybody else out there, Tom Brady? Well, I see him do it every week. I watch the DVD.
You must be able to. It's not as hard as you think.
Obviously. Dude, I watched Eddie Van Halen play the guitar. Heck, I can do that. I've seen it. I bought a guitar. I watched the DVD. Obviously, I know how to play guitar now. And it's the same thing. I bought the Magpul DVD for Advanced Carbine, and I own a carbine. Therefore, I'm good to go in a fight. No, you're not. Get out there and get off your butt and practice and learn what you don't know. Learn what you do know. Find out that something like this great super uber duber high speed open top holster, I can draw from it really quick. But then the second we dropped to the ground to do prone shooting drills and pop back up, my gun went clickety click across the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you want to get something with a little automatic retention on there. You know, or I bought this great super duper Phobos or the Black Hawk Sherpa holster. You know, and I lay on my side to do urban prone shooting with the gun, and when I pop back up, little pieces of dirt got underneath that button, and now the holster is jammed and it's going to have to be cut apart with a Dremel tool.
It's a big paper.
It happens.
Right now.
It does happen, but you're never going to know that if you sit on your sofa and go, I put on all my gear, I looked at myself in the mirror, and it all looked pretty good.
I looked the same as the people in the DVD.
Yeah, but until you use it, good luck. Helmets.
And you know that DVD? You know? 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Okay. This class, I was just there for one day.
Uh-huh.
And it was 8:30 a.m. on the range. We didn't fire our first shots until, gosh, nearly 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But once that was done, it was breakneck pace all the way to 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And there was night shooting, high-stress shooting, shooting with flashlights, shooting steel at night with no flashlights, just utilizing your night sights if you uh-huh. were lucky enough to have them.
Oh, you learn real quick that they're a great thing to have.
Yeah, and moving around with guns in the dark with other people around you doing the same thing.
That takes a lot of trust and a lot of huevos.
And it builds a tremendous amount of stress. Mm-hmm. Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. If you want to join in the fun, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Guns Over Texas, Houston. We're talking about a lot of training that I was able to partake in this weekend, this Saturday in Victoria, Texas. And we've also been talking about the recent HPD shooting of the rapist who likes to beat on old men, too, on, you know, 87-year-old men. Mm-hmm. So you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738. We'll talk anything that goes bang.
Well, we also had another officer shoot somebody here. Was it this morning or yesterday morning? October 14th. It was this morning. Okay. Apparently there was a SWAT standoff somewhere down in the Stafford area around 3 o'clock this morning, and apparently somebody rolled up in their vehicle, rolled down their window, and started trying to ask some of the perimeter officers questions about what was going on. All right. According to investigators, the motorist pulled up alongside a police officer at the scene and began asking questions to the officer. The officer asked the man to turn off his car and step out of the vehicle and identify himself. When the man refused, the officer reached into the car to try to pull the keys out of the vehicle. The man rolled up the car window, pinning the officer's arms inside of the vehicle. During the ensuing struggle, the officer fired a shot through the window that struck the driver. Okay. Relatively plain and simple. Now that we're going to get the innocent bystanders.
Rolling the officer up in the window and driving away is a big failure of the attitude test.
He drove away, but pinning him into the vehicle is a bad thing. Now, I'm already going to get calls or somebody's going to say, well, the officer shouldn't have reached in to pull the keys. If it's 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, you're doing a SWAT scene, somebody rolls up, we don't know what exactly questions were asked. But to me, it would seem like this guy is rolling up. He either knows what's going on here, he knows the person inside, or he's fishing for information for something other than just, oh, what went on, officer? And they asked him to step out of the vehicle. Turn it off and step it out. Those are lawful commands. You're being detained at that point for questioning, whatever reason. I don't know what the reason is, but turn off the vehicle and step out of it. You are being detained until I figure out what's going on. When that guy refuses to do so and you reach in to pull the keys before it turns into a high-speed flight, you're just trying to prevent the situation from going to bad to worst, and the guy rolls up his window to pin you into it where he could drive off and drag you, we are at deadly force now.
That's right. That car is a deadly weapon. 100%
deadly force.
That car is a heck of a lot more deadly than any gun.
Yep. And once he rolled the officer up and pinned him in there, I'm sure the officer told him several times to roll this window down or you're about to get lit up. And, you know, hey, the guy got lit up. Once again, though, we keep going back to who controls the amount of force that's used. Mm-hmm. And the person that is always in control of the amount of force being used is the suspect, never the officer. I don't get to decide that I want to take it to deadly force. I don't get to decide that I want to take it to butt whooping or whatever it has to be. You, the suspect, decide what that is. If I give you a lawful command and you obey it, guess what? I cannot use force.
I'm so sick of hearing our police officers have been shooting a lot of people lately. Why aren't we hearing something better? Like, hey, our police officers are doing a much better job of keeping the turds off the street, putting them where they belong.
Because
that's what the headline
should would imply that somebody should take personal responsibility for their actions, and that's probably not going to happen anytime soon.
Your personal responsibility. Why would we want to have anything about that?
Nope, never.
Well, back to talking a little bit about the class that I was at this weekend. It wasn't all shooting. There was a lot of de-escalation techniques, which was really cool, how to break off and get away in a situation if somebody's trying to slow you down in the street, accost you.
That's a good point, because even at a shooting class, not everything ends with gunfire.
That's right.
And all the shooting we do, we go to the range all the time. We qualify as police officers, civilians, you go there. But the chances of you shooting, that is always the last line of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Verbal techniques, officer presence, just the way you carry yourself can deter an attacker at some point. If you look like a sheep, you're going to attract a wolf.
Yeah.
Don't be a sheep.
And, you know, for people that think that we're out there training to shoot people, well, I'm not going to make any excuses. That's what it's about. But the OC spray,
mm-hmm.
John Farnham made sure that everybody knew that was, you go to that before you go to the gun.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's about shooting people who deserve to be shot.
Mm-hmm.
Some people need to be.
And it will help you.
It's an unfortunate circumstance, you know, of the world we live in now.
If you can say honestly, hey, I told him to get back. He didn't get back. I gave him a little chemical loving. You know, he didn't like the heat wave and he kept coming. You know, I did everything I could to avoid having to shoot this cat.
Mm-hmm.
He dictated the level of force being used. I wanted to break contact. I told him several times, I'm trying to break contact. Get back. Leave me alone. I'm walking away. He's advancing towards me. Who's in charge of the level of force being used?
That's right.
The bad guy. Yep. Every time.
And if you keep going, you know, if you come across somebody on a corner and they're trying to stop you, you know, hey, excuse me, I need help. My dog just had puppies. I need some gas.
Yep.
On and on. You just break off. Go gun away from them. You know, we would always want our gun side to be away from the person. And so I can't help you, you know, yep. And continue to leave. He's probably not going to leave that spot because guess what? He makes money on that spot.
Yep.
And if he leaves that spot, somebody else is going to take that spot from him.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a number of techniques that were used in order to get people to break off.
Mm-hmm.
One, there was a woman that was there that this was the coolest thing ever. She was at a gas station pumping gas and had two men, one from each side,
mm-hmm.
come. And they were obviously looking to get at least money or something from her.
Mm-hmm.
And she used the gas pump. And she hosed them with gas, and they took off pretty quick. So that was thinking outside the box.
Yeah. We definitely took it to deadly force.
It's too bad she didn't have a lighter.
Yeah, assuming she had a match. Yeah, good Lord. Yeah.
But some of the most important things, I guess the lesson that was most important learned was that we don't learn much at all from success. We learn from our failures.
Yes.
And so when people got out there and they shot these spinners and they were put under stress and, well, let me say they tried to shoot the spinners.
Uh-huh.
And when they were put under stress, they learned a lot real, real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to everybody out there individually, and it was well worth it money-wise,
mm-hmm.
to everybody that went out there. And, you know, you got to look at it. There's a hotel for two nights.
Yep.
There's the $495 cost of the class. You've got at least $400 in ammunition.
Yep.
You know, you're looking at $1,000,
$1,100. Well, plus your gun, your leather, your nylon, all your, mm-hmm. your
everything that you've
like
already
that.
Invested in.
Yep. Well, you should already invest in. I hope nobody goes out to the class without a holster and with one mag or something.
Oh, I'm such an idiot. I went out there. I left my cover shirt at home. All I had was a T-shirt because you work from cover.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want to wear just my T-shirt because it was kind of a thin T-shirt, and you could see I was only wearing my shield, and so you could see it from the front.
So you came undergunned.
I had all my other guns with me, but uh-huh. I didn't have my cover garments. I didn't have my hat. I didn't have the right shooting glasses. I left my flashlights at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was a mess.
Now,
I couldn't believe it.
We talk well about the shield. We like the shield. We like the car. We like these guns, but. After you actually had to go out and engage a threat, what do you think about a 6-round gun?
The shield is a 9-round gun.
No, okay, I'm thinking back to the 1911.
Oh, 1911.
You learn. I've got my one single stack of ammo, and man, a double stack really has
really
advantages.
Comes in handy.
Yeah,
and you know, I actually felt bad for a lot of the 1911 guys because they were out there thinking that was the premier choice for defensive weapon, and I know I'm going to catch a lot of heck from people out there that do believe in the 1911 that way. Uh-huh. And I don't get me wrong. I believe
it's
everybody should
platform.
Own a 1911.
I love it. But
they call
you
it God's
carry,
gun for a reason.
You got to carry a lot of mags, man.
And you got to reload constantly. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of these drills, you reload before you run out of ammo. You don't want to go to slide lock.
Mm-hmm.
And so you make that 8-round gun a 6 or a 7 round gun.
You see, some of us thought ahead and bought the Paraordnance double stack 45 version.
Oh, the Canadian gun.
So we don't have to reload as often. But you single stack folks, you know.
It's a para. Come on, man.
It was the only double stack 1911 in 1993 when I bought the damn thing.
Let me ask you this. In law enforcement, do y'all do a lot of nighttime training?
Yes, we do. At least once a year, we have to shoot qualification at night.
Okay. We did. We went through the Harry's and the Good techniques. Mm-hmm. You familiar with those?
Yes.
Which do y'all teach?
We actually teach. There's four of them that we teach. The Harry's, the Ayub, the neck hold, and the modified FBI.
Okay. I'm not sure about the last two, but the Harry's. You illuminate your sights from behind. So your gun is out. Mm-hmm. Your support side hand is holding the flashlight right around the head area.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're illuminating your sights from behind and illuminating your target at the same time.
We call that the modified neck hold there.
Okay.
So because you're holding it basically up on your shoulder. The length of the flashlight is going back across you like you're holding a paper towel tube, the old cop light, and you're illuminating across the top of your sights.
Okay.
And that works great if you don't have night sights. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
The other type that you were talking about, what was the other one? You had the Ayub?
The Good. And so the Harry's in the Good. And the Good is that technique backlights the sights when you illuminate the targets.
Uh-huh.
So your I guess the support side hand crosses underneath the gun. It's going to cross underneath your wrist, your strong side wrist.
Back to back.
And then the palms go back to back, correct? Mm-hmm.
And that's the one I prefer personally, is the back-to-back hands. And
I like that because you get support from your support side hand holding the flashlight.
Mm-hmm. And it's for me, the most stable, depending on what I'm shooting. I like having both hands out there in front. Mm-hmm. I do not like the cigar style. That's the Ayub, where you actually hold the flashlight almost like a syringe mm-hmm. that you're going to inject with, and you press the end cap with that. I feel that gives me little to no control over the flashlight and little to no support on the handgun. People like it, though, because the hands index in the same direction. The light is supposed to index the same direction as the gun. I can't get it to work for me worth a flip. A lot of people love it. They swear by it. I'm not a big fan of it.
Well, a problem that I have with that is that flashlight is easily dropped.
Yep.
And that's something that we saw quite a bit of.
And if they make lights that are specifically designed with a small O-ring type device around it to give them purchase on it when they're trying to use it like a syringe.
That is that's made by First Light. And I actually put up a link to that on the Guns Over Texas Radio Facebook page because that I got to use that this weekend. That's the light that John carries with him constantly. And it is awesome. It's 250 lumens, I believe. Mm-hmm. But it has the red and blue lights on it, the alternating lights. It's got the high powered LED light. It has it's got the ring that you can actually wear it on your hand so you can get a full grip on the gun. It's called the, I believe it's the Tomahawk, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And it is cool.
And if you have time to put this thing on, because you have to put it on, and if you have time to remember that there's multiple switches and multiple positions, do I want the strobe? Do I want the high power? Do I want the low power? Do I want the red and blues? Do I want the navigation lights? Do I want the curb feelers? Do I want
GPS?
The turn indicators on it? I mean, I'm not a big fan of something, because it looks really neat, and when I'm sitting on the sofa at home and I just bought it, wow, look at all this neat, cool stuff it can do. Okay, let me wake you up at 4 in the morning, let me slap you a couple times, let me start screaming in your head, someone's coming to kill you, and figure out how that thing's going to light up and work.
Well,
I like a simple, surefire with one button on the end that does one thing.
Why don't you just have it set to come on to the light?
Did you remember to set it for that?
Why would I take it off of that?
Okay, then why do you need all the other settings?
I don't know. It's cool.
Just more to go wrong. I like a simple light. I've got a couple of lights that are like that with the multiple switches. I have a stream light that's a rechargeable that actually has a strobe, and it has a high and a low beam and stuff on there. And it works great up until the last time we did night qual, and the switch just totally pooped out on me. And I couldn't get it to come on at all. And after it was done qualing, I actually beat it on the heel of my boot for about a minute straight because I was so mad. And then it came back on. And all it taught me was, once again, is, man, when you need something the most, it's going to break
gonna
with
fail.
All those extra bells and whistles and doohickeys. The super fancy button that does 18 functions didn't work. The pocket flashlight that I had as backup with one thing on and off was all it had. And that worked like a champ.
We had a rep from Surefire out there, and so we got to play with a lot of the new Surefire toys. Mm-hmm. And as you know, Surefire makes excellent.
I know I have like four
excellent
of them.
Lamps.
I like my Surefires.
They have 750 lumen lights that are out now, and granted, they're about $500, but you get what you pay for. And if you're an officer, That
can
thing
burn
is,
the retinas out of a person.
Yeah, it's definitely a weapon. And for you people out there that think, oh, well, you know, it's a light. How is it a weapon? Well, not only is it built like a tank with the solid housing and everything, but 750 lumens. Actually, what is it? 70 lumens is considered disorienting?
The original Surefire light that came out back in the day was 60 lumens, and I thought it was one of the brightest things in the world compared to, like, the mini mag lights and the C-battery mag lights and stuff that we had to work with that just weren't putting out. I mean, they'd light up, but they weren't putting out devastating light.
Yeah, it was more of a gray, a cool gray light.
And then the 60-lumen Surefire, the original one in the late 80s, early 90s came out, and it put out a good amount of light compared to everything else. I look at 60 now and go,
it's nothing.
That's nothing. I would say if you're out there looking, look for at least 100 lumen in a tactical light because you want that even if people close their eyes at night, if I put this in your face and I'm shining it on you, it is a defensive tool. I can put light in your face and I can move around and I can do stuff. And as soon as I flash that light off and on, it's like a camera flash going on. I can screw up your night vision enough that I can hopefully break contact or do something to get away from you.
It can give you a couple of seconds. Especially
it can give you a few seconds.
The strobe function. I got hit with the strobe function with a 250 or so lumen light. And I was not pleased about it. It was definitely disorienting. And I saw the strobe well after it was on.
But I've always thought if the strobe is disorienting to the person you're putting it in the face of, wouldn't it be disorienting to you on your end? I've never found it disorienting. I've got a light that has the strobe on it. But
have you strobed yourself?
No. I've strobed, you know, in training and stuff. We strobed each other, and I was like, okay. didn't do much for me. Other people complained. Like you said, other people said it gave them vertigo.
Yeah.
But for me, it didn't. It was like, okay, it's a light, you know.
Well, and a lot of these flashlights have strike bezels on them, too.
Ooh, the meat tenderizer.
Yeah, I can't remember what word he used for it, but it was a very passive-sounding word. But it was a DNA collector, essentially, is what they're calling it. And if you strike somebody with these things, you will definitely walk away with somebody else's skin on your flashlight.
Yeah, which is cool. You're in court. Well, you defended yourself against this client, against this attacker or whatever. It's like, were you armed with a gun or a knife? No, I had a flashlight. He kept coming, and I hit him with my flashlight. Now, my flashlight has saw teeth around the bezel. But, again, it's a lot less. If you're going through a security checkpoint or anything else, if you're dumping your keys and your other stuff in a tray, it's a flashlight. And a lot of places are going to go, oh, it's a flashlight, and just let you go on your way. It's still a metallic impact tool.
If you're flying, you can drop your flashlight in your carry-on bag or in your briefcase, and it's just a flashlight.
Yes, it is.
Until you need to use it as a self-defense weapon.
Yep. Unfortunately, you got a close distance, and I would hate to have to fight on an airplane. That's the worst place in the world to fight.
But. Yeah, but if you have to, at least you have something.
Yeah.
Houston, we're going to take a quick commercial break. If you want to get involved in the show, you can give us a call at 281-558-5738. We'll be right back with more Guns Over Texas. Over Texas, Houston. We're talking about some recent training I got to partake in last night, actually. I was there all day Saturday, all night Saturday. And there is more training. Let's remind everybody, see our friends at Spectre Firearms. Our guest last week, Larry Ryland, Green Beret, is going to be putting on a class at the Impact Zone for Spectre Firearms. So if you're interested in taking one of these classes to become an actual operator instead of a shooter,
that money that you were going to spend on buying another gun, oh, I've got four rifles. Well, how about you own one rifle and learn how to use that rifle backwards and forwards? Go out and take a class and learn how to use what you got. Before you say, I got eight guns and I'm not real proficient with any of them, pick a gun, buy some training, and buy some ammo, and go out there and learn how to run that gun like your life depends on it, because someday it could.
You know, you don't know how much you don't know until you take one of these classes. Big eye-opening experience. And, you know, we had the standard bearers out there, the guys who thought they knew what they were doing. A lot of them veterans. There were a couple of vets out there that didn't want to listen to what I had to say until John said the same thing that I had to say. And
it was nice to hear him back up a lot of the stuff we've been saying.
That's right. I couldn't get them to correct themselves because I was the youngest guy out there for the most part. Nobody wanted to listen to me because I didn't know what I was talking about. But then when John came over, noticed the issues I was having getting a few of the guys to do what I wanted them to do, they very quickly decided that maybe they should have just done it when I told them to. And so, and then shortly after they started using these methods, they learned that their methods were indeed inferior. And they should have been doing it.
There's a lot of dogma in the military that is dogma that might have been great in 1952, and they just keep training it and training it and training it. And when you try to explain to them that it's not exactly right, there's better ways to do it, there's some institutional inertia that just can't be broken on some ranges. The institutional inertia in the military of we have to unload all of our guns when we enter a building, but when we step out of the building, we load our weapons. Is it somehow more likely that the gun is going to spontaneously go off because I'm standing with sheetrock around me? But somehow,
could
if there's
be the
air around me, the gun won't spot. I mean, if the gun is safe when I'm outside to carry loaded, wouldn't it stand to reason it's safe to carry inside loaded as long as I keep my booger hook off the bang switch?
I've said it before. I'll say it again. Let's not try to use logic and reason when it comes to bureaucracy.
But still, it's the military mindset. Sometimes you have to sit back and go, wow, really? Seriously? And they'll teach some very poor habits. And people will come out, I was in the Army. Okay, that's great. I know they taught you one way, but that might not be the best way.
That's not the most effective or efficient way possible.
They taught you the safest way to train a gaggle or a herd of people 100 at a time in the least amount of rounds possible to get you out the door so they can get the next 100 people in there and hope you'll pick up better habits along the way. You know, and there's some higher tier operators, whether they go to Ranger School or some other things, where they're actually going to spend more time. Like, we're actually going to spend days doing house clearing.
Yeah,
we're actually going to spend
days
doing
vehicles.
As smaller
groups or as individuals.
Yes, and they will actually get the higher speed training. But just, I qualified with my 100 rounds in basic training. Yeah, you laid perfectly still and the target laid perfectly still. You learned basic sight manipulation. You didn't learn how to run the gun.
That's right.
You know.
Now, we also got to play with some other pretty cool tools that I hadn't seen yet that that you could use as self-defense for those situations when you just aren't allowed to carry a gun or a blade. And one of
as
those,
I'm holding my fist up to the microphone.
The most deadly weapons known to man, Jason's hands.
The most sensual tools as well.
There was the ST Action Pro Talon. Now, I put a link to this as well on the Guns Over Texas Radio Facebook page. And these are basically what John likes to call them as a hard drive repair tool. But you put it in your hand, and it is polymer knuckles, basically. And so if you need to get into a fight, you have these clipped on the inside of your belt. You know, it doesn't look threatening. It doesn't look menacing. It looks like it could definitely be a hard drive repair tool.
Now, is a polymer knuckle a legal or prohibited weapon? I know brass knuckles are specifically prohibited, but if it's polymer, is it brass knuckle? They're going to say, oh, well, they're not metallic, therefore they're not.
I don't know. I don't know if it's the...
I just don't want to recommend that somebody carry something that falls under the prohibited weapons list.
Well, I'm not recommending it. I'm saying this is a cool toy that I got to play with. But it is for sale for $20 at staactionpro.com. I'm on the site right now, and I don't see anything on it saying that it's, you know, illegal. But it's a tactical impact device. It has a clip on it, so you can put it in your pocket. You can wear it around the neck, clip it to the vest or the shirt pocket. It's accessible in almost any fighting position, and its design allows the optimum striking position while held in the hand. And so you can move the clip on either side as well. 1995, and this thing, it could definitely help you out in situations.
Okay, I'm looking at the picture now. I was thinking a knuckle encasing device. That is more like a prong that would stick out between your fingers as you're holding it, and definitely, yeah, I could see how that would get someone's attention.
That could make somebody's day very bad.
Yeah.
So, and for $20, it's worth putting in your pocket. I mean,
yeah.
I'd almost rather, well,
I guess I'd rather have a blade than that, but I would definitely like to have that as a backup. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, you never know what's going to happen in one hand. Maybe maybe you can't use a blade for some reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe the blade breaks. You never know. You can always fall back on something else. It weighs almost nothing and could definitely help you out if you're in a pinch.
Yeah, that's cheap too.
Yeah. So, and then after that, we had the cold steel walking stick. Now, I'm not sure that this is something that a young, in shape person could get away with unless you get to that, you know, line at the airport and you start hobbling around. But it's a cane. Well, it's a whooping stick is what it is. It's a heavy-duty polymer cane that can be used as a club. And I've heard that it's gotten through many a checkpoint.
And it's got a big steel knob on the end of it. Well, pardon me, it has a handle, a rounded handle for ease of carry and comfort in the palm while you're supporting your weight of your body.
That's right, exactly.
That I'm sure would just leave a dent in your skull.
So there's a lot of alternate methods out there of being able to take some sort of weapon with you when your gun or your knife just won't suffice. Now, Jason, have you actually seen any of this stuff before?
Yeah, I've seen it in the past. I just didn't know what it was called. Like with the Talon you were mentioning earlier, mm-hmm. I've seen similar things. I just didn't know that was the actual name of it.
Oh, would you consider that a viable option?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't want to get hit with it. It's kind of like somebody saying, oh, well, that wouldn't stop an attacker. Well, you want me to punch you with it a couple times, see how it feels? Basically, it's taking whatever impact instead of spreading it out over your entire fist, it's taking it to a point about as big around as a thick marker and delivering all the force into one concentrated area, yes. Which is definitely going to take up the level of impact significantly.
Well, I can tell you, I will be placing my order for my ST Action Pro tonight. I want that thing, or I'm sorry, my Talon, Pro Talon, that's what mm-hmm. it's called, at stactionpro.com.
We'll punch some sheetrock with it, see how it works out.
We'll give it a shot. May mm-hmm. as well. Don't need this hand anyway if it doesn't work. One of the things I hear from people at the range all the time is, you know, when we ask them, do you have your concealed handgun license yet? Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't need my license. Well, why don't you need your license? Mm-hmm. I can have my gun in my house. Okay, do you leave your house? Mm-hmm. I can take my gun with me in my car. Okay, mm-hmm. do you ever get out of your car? Well, yeah. Okay, you usually in parking lots while you do that? Well, yeah. You go into busy stores? Well, yeah. Why wouldn't you want to take your gun in there?
And well, if I need it, I can go out to my car and get it. Well, if you go out to your car anyway, you just leave. You don't go back to the fight. You get away. You know.
So I was, the parking lot is a very profitable place for criminals to hang out. There's a lot of people getting in and out of cars. Cars can bring them money. And all your goods inside your car can bring them money.
And all you folks that put your SIG sticker or your Glock sticker or your Colt sticker or NRA Life Member sticker, you know, I'm an NRA Life Member. I'll be damned if I'm sticking it on the back of my car so someone can go, wow, there's something to break into. Mm-hmm. He might have, even if his gun's on him, maybe there's some extra ammo. Maybe there's some tar. Maybe there's something in there I can use.
NRA members generally have jobs, too. He might have some tools or something in there, you know?
Yeah. So I'm a very big advocate for not advertising that you're a gun owner in any way, shape, form, or fashion. Nobody should know that you've got that gun unless you've got to whip it out and take care of business.
You should try to be invisible.
Yep.
Blend in with the crowds.
The gray man.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to John about concealed handgun licenses. He's a big fan of the state of Texas with our program and the way it's run. And his take, now keep in mind, this is John Farnham, former chief of police in Colorado and, you know, law enforcement veteran for many a decade. Also spent many years as a Marine. And this guy is a lifetime military and law enforcement guy. That's what he does. And the first words out of his mouth when I asked him about people that think that just carrying in their car is good enough is, in all of his experience in law enforcement, the two most dangerous places for people to be are driveways and parking lots.
Yep.
And that's, you know, people get complacent.
Because your hands are full. You're mm-hmm. either just coming from or just entering an area. So you're thinking about that. And do you have all of your stuff you just purchased, or is your wallet full because you're getting ready to go in and make your purchases?
Mm-hmm.
These are both bad things.
Still in your car? Did you leave it in there? If you take your gun out of your car when you get to your house, is it in a gun sock? Is it in a holster? Is it easily accessible?
Is it loaded?
Probably not. Yeah, that's another great question. So probably not to all of those things, except for is it loaded? People generally that I've met keep their truck guns loaded. But you've got to keep that in mind. And so now is the time, if you don't have your concealed handgun license yet, now is the time to get it. You can get it at Shiloh Indoor Shooting Range. If you have a friend, a spouse, a coworker, a son, a daughter that wants to take the class with you, we're running a special right now. Two for $150. That's two concealed handgun licenses for $150. Normal price is $99. Two of them for $150 right now. You can give us a call at 281-444-8930. That's 281-444-8930 and sign up for that CHL today. Now, we also need to talk about real quick. We need to remind everybody about the jailbreak run for the HPD police officers. Is it the police officers union?
Yes.
And that's going to be Saturday, October 27th. It's an all-day deal. It starts at 8:30 in the morning. You can run the jailbreak. That's a mud run with 20 challenging, fun-filled obstacles. And you actually get chased by officers on bikes. You deal with landmines, lights, sirens. It's a heck of a good time. So when you can go to runthejailbreak.com and sign up for that. Houston, that's another 2 hours down at Guns Over Texas Radio. Questions, comments, you can give me at jeff@gunsovertexasradio.com. I appreciate the email correspondence. Shoot straight, Houston.